Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh yeah, baby! Football Friday, presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA.
Oh, that'll get you going.
It is the Texans. It is the Ravens. It is Sunday. It is 3:25. And Seth Payne, my goal is by 10 a.m. today, I am going to be mentally in a place where I have the Texans winning this game. That's my goal by 10 o'clock today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Brainwash ourselves? That's no problem at all.
You think
we've only got the pregame show is tougher because we only have like 2 hours and 50 minutes to brainwash everybody else.
Right.
So we brainwash ourselves this morning, and by Sunday, the pregame show at 12:25 p.m. We'll be ready to just convert a whole bunch of people to believers, which will be perfect because they'll have time to go to church in the morning, as I'm sure every single one of them will.
Right.
And then start drinking in the parking lot after church, and then get here.
That's a really good point. I think prayer and alcohol are the two big keys to the game on Sunday. Prayer alcohol.
Is there a preacher, a minister, a rabbi in Houston that has the that has the guts to allow his parishioners to drink during their service on Sunday for the good of the team? I challenge all of you.
That's my church right there. That's what I want. Yeah. So it's
the Holy Spirit comes into your body a lot. It lowers the defense.
The Holy Spirit of William O'Brien and Deshaun Watson getting ready for Sunday and the Ravens coming to town. And Seth, I was thinking about this game yesterday, pondering it all day long, and I'm thinking, you know what this is? This is an opportunity. The Texans just had one of their worst performances on a big stage last Thursday against the Kansas City Chiefs. I would hope that they were embarrassed by that performance, because embarrassment can drive you to do better things the following week. This has to be viewed as an opportunity to flip the script. That's how you've got to view it as a player, as a fan. It's an opportunity to get this season back on track. You're off track a little bit early here, and you've got the team that a lot of folks think is the best team. It's not Kansas City, it's Baltimore, the best team in the AFC, and they're coming to your place on Sunday. Granted, it will be empty, but you got to flip it, man. This is an opportunity to do that for this team and wash the taste out of their mouths.
It's not going to be completely empty. I'm going to be there, and I'm not sitting in the press box. I'm going to try to smuggle a bullhorn in my pants to try to make as much noise as possible. And, yes, going 0-2 is a rough way to start. Now, look, it's not – going 0-2 at the beginning of an NFL season isn't the same as going 0-2 to start an NBA playoff series or anything. But it's tough. And guys know that. Your back's up against the wall already. You don't want to go 0-3, God forbid. But this is a brutal, brutal, brutal beginning to this Texans schedule. If they can get out of these first four games at 2-2,
oh my God,
and then almost start with a clean slate after that, it almost would be like the real season begins after weathering the storm of these first three or four games. Yeah, you got to pull this off. And remember that the Ravens last year dropped two in a row early to Kansas City, okay, and then the Cleveland Browns. Yeah. The Cleveland Browns, they lost to last year.
I know you're going to have a lot of stuff throughout the show today. I know you watched pretty intently that the Titans playoff win over the Ravens last year. Maybe some things we can pull from that. We'll get to that a little later on in the hour. Seth, I was making my rounds yesterday. As I've been doing this week, I've been kind of like a sports talk warden over the last week, making my rounds around the prison that is football and checking in. I checked in on Philadelphia earlier this week because they had a similar week that the Texans had. I checked in on Cleveland earlier this week because they, until last night, had a similar week to the Texans. And, of course, checking in yesterday, making my rounds, and checking Baltimore sports talk radio, our sister station there, The Fan up in Baltimore, there is very little respect for the Texans out there in the football community right now. If you are a Texans player and you're listening to this show and I know there are some that do listen on their way into the stadium, know that there is nobody in the city of Baltimore that is giving you one modicum of respect right now, not even a teensy tiny little bit right now.
I get it. You know what? They're a great regular season football team. They're just absolutely incredible in the regular season, the Ravens are. They can't win a playoff game to save their lives. I mean, they haven't in a long time, really. You go back to the Super Bowl, that was great. Then they missed the playoffs for a bunch of years. Now Lamar Jackson is an absolute phenom. Best quarterback in the league last year. Sucked in the playoffs. So I can see why they're hanging their hat so resoundingly on a regular season football
game.
Because
this is their time of year? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this is when they shine. It's September through December in Baltimore. If you don't have Joe Flacco, though, all of that goes out the window. I mean, Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson. Who's more elite? I don't know. Hard to say. I look at Lamar Jackson in the playoffs last year. First drive, interception. Second drive, stuffed as the runner on fourth and one. Third drive, sailed one into the stands on third and eight. Hey, then a couple glorious field goal drives. Then he starts off by the second half by getting stuffed on fourth and one again, where, frankly, Lamar Jackson, for all of his running prowess, looked like a squirrel in the road. Didn't make any sense on this QB sneak, what the hell he was doing. He ran to the right, could have gotten the first down, decided to run to the left. You know when you're driving and there's a squirrel in front of you, and the squirrel gets himself to safety?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, good job, little squirrel.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he runs back and you squash him dead. That was Lamar Jackson in the playoffs.
Wow.
No smarter than a damn squirrel in the road. So of course they're excited about this regular season game.
Naturally. And so, very, very little respect going on up in Baltimore. And meanwhile, Seth Anthony Weaver, I was on his Zoom call yesterday, and the big talk seems to be with Weaver, with Whitney Mercilus, who did a Zoom conference call with the media yesterday. The big word seems to be discipline. That seems to be – Whitney was saying that discipline and technique is what they were lacking against the Chiefs. It wasn't speed. It was discipline and technique. And Anthony Weaver is over-communicating the need for discipline against Lamar Jackson this weekend. That's the big buzzword with the Texans, it seems, on that side of the ball.
And a lot of the players have echoed that sentiment. Discipline, one of the hard things about that Chiefs game was it started to be the personnel matchups. The Texans had to go to their nickel defense even when the Chiefs were playing two tight ends, just because they were getting crushed by the tight ends. You know, that was one of the reasons early on that you had Justin Reed playing outside on the cornerback, was they just didn't have enough defensive backs on the field. So they added more defensive backs, and that's when the Chiefs really started to gash the Texans in the run. And that's also when the mental errors really compound really quickly. So they've got to be an eighth of a second faster, and they've got to be 6 inches closer on a lot of those plays. Because when you're playing against a team like the Chiefs or the Ravens, being 6 seconds or 6 inches out of position ends up turning into an extra 5 yard game.
Yeah. You know what else I noticed in listening to them too, and this plays into Jadeveon Clowney a little bit, is that the one guy, they did like a film study segment on the Texans. It was Vinny Serrato, who used to be the GM for the Redskins. He did like he studied the film of the Chiefs game. And a little bit like the Texans actually were throughout training camp, they're like, you know who, other than J.J. Watt on this defense, you know who the Ravens really need to look out for? They need to look out for Jacob Martin. That Jacob Martin is a guy, I tell you, he's very athletic. He's very disruptive on passing downs. He's a guy, you know, and I'm sitting there listening and I'm thinking, you know, Jacob Martin, he had a sack on the very first series, and that's a play that flashes because Patrick Mahomes doesn't get sacked very much. But as I'm listening to them say this, I'm like, they realize Jacob Martin is not on the field all that much, and that when he does make a play, it's usually a sack or it's some sort of QB pressure, but he doesn't make many other plays. And I'm thinking to myself, if I were Jadeveon Clowney listening to this film study going on right now, I'd be throwing my drink at the radio like, man, I don't sack the quarterback. Like, Jacob Martin's going to get $10 million a year from somebody in 2 years because he flashes five times a year. You know what I mean? It was hilarious. This is a guy who was a GM of an NFL team. He's like, it's J.J. Watt, and then it's Jacob Martin. And I'm like, those are the two guys, huh? No wonder our defense is 27th in DVOA.
He played 18 snaps in the game.
He's the guy.
This is where it is true. He's so freaking fast. If you could just get to third and long. Part of the problem for the Texans' pass rush in this game, and this is going to be the meekest, lamest excuse ever given, was that they just couldn't get to third down.
Right.
So the Chiefs were constantly in this this, you know, quick release mode where they could dink and dunk, and it was effective enough that they were getting to second and four, third
all day.
And three.
All day.
Yeah, so there was never a time, there were very few times where you could put Jacob Martin out there and just be like, hey, just pin your ears back. There were very few obvious passing situations, which I'm obviously not making an actual excuse for him. It was just that kind of day where everything was just humming for the Chiefs.
All right, history will be made this Sunday at NRG Stadium in one respect, and I can guarantee you that, and it sounds like it'll be the last time that it's made. We'll explain next. Yeah, Football Friday, Ravens-Texans, 3:25 kickoff on Sunday. There will be no fans in the stadium on Sunday, unless you count Seth Payne, who's planning on sneaking a bullhorn in his pants and thundersticks down each pant leg. He's going to be cheering really loudly, mostly just to tweak John McClain is why he's going to cheer.
Technically, I'd be sneaking in two bullhorns, but one would be for shouting.
Is that a bullhorn, or are you just Seth Payne?
You know how confident I would be at that security line with a bullhorn in my pants?
Let's make that happen.
But the body search? Yeah, I bet you want to.
Let's go. So the big announcement yesterday from the Texans, and we will get back into the Ravens and the Texans. Bottom of the hour, Seth's going to pull some things from the Titans' playoff loss last year that the Texans may be able to hang their hats on. Keys to the game at the bottom of the hour. But this is a big announcement because I know we've got a lot of listeners out there who would like to get back into, Seth, even a partially full stadium. They'd like to be back into some semblance of a Sunday mode of going back out to the stadium. And the Texans announced on social media yesterday that they are working with city and county officials to have up to 15,000 fans in week four of the season when the Minnesota Vikings come to town. That'll be the second home game of the season for the Texans. Here is Texans president Jamie Roots talking about that yesterday.
This entity, the Houston Texans, it means a lot to our community. It means a lot to our fans, and particularly the fans that will be coming out to this game. Their life and their minds wouldn't be the same without it. And so we do feel a responsibility to get it right, but we also see ourselves as the caretakers of a community asset. You know, we only want people to come who want to come. I mean, this is your decision. We're making it available because it just feels right when there is a big group of the population that wants to participate in this. It's really our responsibility to do our level best to make it available to them and make it safe for them to participate.
So, Seth, the only two stadiums that had fans in it in week one were Jacksonville and Kansas City. So one of the stadiums involved the Texans. Look, that wasn't the difference in the game. Kansas City was just a much better football team. But I will say this, and again, we're just watching it on TV. I don't know if it translated for guys who were in the stadium that night, but it did sound loud. I would guess that it did make a difference just in terms of the adrenaline for the players having fans in the stadium as opposed to it being empty. So this is a good thing that the Texans are. I wish they were doing it for this Sunday, quite honestly, considering who's coming to town.
I think that in one of the other clips, Jamie had mentioned that, hey, it's good for the players. It's important for the players. It's important to all these other people, and it's also important to the players. It's got to be a hollow feeling just playing like it's a practice. Yeah. Belichick had one of his classic one-word responses. Some reporter the other day asked, these reporters get so nervous when they're talking to Belichick. And he went on like a three-minute ramble about how awesome Belichick is and how many great environments he's played in. And what would you compare it to? And Belichick just said, practice.
Reporter spent a minute queuing it up, and Belichick gave it 2 seconds.
Like if there's one person that is immune to just empty flattery, it's going to be Belichick, I would imagine. But yeah, for the players themselves, you get juice out of that. You get actual, I feel like the energy permeates your skin and gives you extra energy as a player on the field. So I understand the leagues being as careful as possible because, look, the big money, especially in the NFL, is with the television money. So if at the beginning you said no fans, we got to be super careful. There's a PR component too, obviously. Yeah. But if largely municipalities everywhere are allowing 25% capacity in stadiums, and I think even in New York State they're allowing 25% in restaurants, and I think in New York State they're even allowing 25% in restaurants in most places.
Yeah.
which is, you know, one of the most restrictive places. For the life of me, I have not been able to understand how a stadium, which has so much more open air, like so much more volume per person in there, if you're only at 20% capacity, I really don't see a reason not to do it as long as that's what the standard is in your city. If they're allowing 25% capacity at other retail establishments, this is just another retail establishment.
Yeah, well, my main thing, Seth, is I don't want them anywhere near the players, them being the fans. Like, I don't want them, like, start them 20 rows back. I'm being serious about this because the timing in some ways of the Texans posting that on social media, in a way, I'm not going to say it couldn't have been worse, but the timing was maybe coincidentally for them not the most beneficial, because right about the same time yesterday, story comes out about Kansas City, who had fans in the stadium for week one, as we know, and they had about 16,000 fans in there, and they had a fan test positive, so they've got 10 fans who are around that fan going into quarantine. I don't know if it's that big a deal, quite honestly. If this wasn't a fan who was anywhere near players, I mean, this is just yet another case of the COVID and social, you're doing contact tracing and things like that. But it, you know, it gets a headline. It gets Pro Football Talk. It gets everybody talking. And Jamie Roots was actually asked about that yesterday as well.
And that's one of the reasons why we made a commitment early on that we were not going to have fans for our first game. I mean, I'm all for innovation and being, being a blazing a trail, but I'd rather spend some time learning. And I think those types of exposures you're naturally going to have when you're in a different environment. There's so much complexity to what we're doing. And so as a league and as a team, for sure, we're very good at after action reviews. When at Kansas City, we had one of our operations people there doing a benchmarking study to figure out how do we take what they've done and learn from it, the things that worked well, and how do we get even better. They were in Jacksonville. They were in Austin last Saturday night. They'll be up in Dallas. So I'm not sure what the answer is, John, but I know we've got to prevent things like that happening.
Yeah, Seth, as I'm listening to Jamie talk about that, like Jamie is a smart, talented, busy guy. He's the president of an NFL team. How different is this year, how different since March of this year, how different has it been, not just for Jamie Roots, but for everybody, obviously the football operation side as well. Just, these are all people who have super long, super busy days, and now you've injected a pandemic into the mix and managing a pandemic into the mix. It's crazy.
Yeah. I feel like the days aren't as busy in some respects, though, too. You just kind of shuffle some things around. They're not going to have to deal with nearly as many, like, drunken fist fights amongst fans.
Well, that is true. I guess you just have different problems, right?
Yeah, like, at the average NFL game, I don't know how many people are taken into custody every week, but I'm guessing it'll be at least 20% the normal amount, and probably even less because there's less people bumping into each other
when they come. Yeah, I guess maybe not the workload, but just the different style of work that you're doing. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, these people are having to become, like, quasi-medical experts. You know what I mean?
The mental challenge. By the way, when that question was asked to Jamie, the reporter said that the fan had gotten too close to the players. I've read 7 different articles about this, and I have not seen that.
I have not either. Seth, I went Googling and trying to find that myself. Okay. I'm going, okay, I'm not reading that anywhere. No, I'm with you. I didn't find that anywhere. But it is what made me think that the reporter, whoever it was that asked that question on Jamie's Zoom call, is the one who made me think what I just said a minute ago, which is, you know what, start these fans in row 25. Don't get them anywhere near the... We don't need anything that increases the chances, even a microscopic chance, of a player getting some little spit module hitting them in the face and then getting the coronavirus.
Look, as in my role as a Harris County COVID commissioner, self-proclaimed, and I know I haven't worn that hat in a while now because, frankly, I got tired of the job.
Well, you've done such a good job of getting the curve squashed here. You haven't had to do much
lately.
That's
true, I mean, for the most part. Well, that's where I kind of felt like it wasn't mission accomplished, but, you know, like, as I like to say in my family, close enough. And that's the standards I hold my children and my wife to. So I figured, but I will say that the gold standard in terms of really hoping to get it under control is if you have 10 new active cases in a week per 100,000 residents.
Okay.
So let's take that sample size of Kansas City where you had 15,000 fans, or I saw, how many was it?
16,000.
One fan testing positive out of 16,000 is well below that 10 per 100,000 ratio. And so this isn't any different than the population. This is actually less than the population at large in Missouri right now. And until there's a huge outbreak or something and you can trace back dozens of cases or at least multiple cases to an NFL event, I don't think it's a real story.
All right. It's a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Download the Radio.com app. You heard me talking about listening to our sister station in Baltimore earlier. And when I did that, because I have the Radio.com app, you can rewind to the beginning of shows. It's fantastic. Download it today. Bring us with you wherever you go. Did the Titans give the blueprint to the Texans for an upset on Sunday? Seth Payne, keys to the game. Seth is going to make you smarter at the water cooler in about 5 minutes. That's next. Yeah, yeah. Happy Football Friday to all of you. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. 3:25 kickoff on Sunday. The Ravens coming to town. Seth, the Ravens embarrassed. The Ravens embarrassed the Texans last year in Baltimore 41-7. Hopefully the Texans are carrying that around with them in a positive way. Are they carrying that around with them in a positive way? Seth, you've been on teams that have been blown out by teams before, and you come out the next year, and you want to, I would imagine, have a little something for them, the Texans, when you combine that with how they looked on Thursday night. How, I mean, do we...
No, if it were a normal year with a normal preseason, I would say, how the hell did this happen? And I mean, there's still part of me that wants to say that, because other teams did show up to play in week one, even though it was COVID, even though there were no preseason games or inter-squad scrimmages. All of those things should help make you sharper on opening day. A lot of teams weren't, and the Texans are one of them. So I'm not releasing them from blame for that, but I also don't think it was, wow, they're so forlorn and despondent over the playoff loss that 8 months later, that's why they sucked in week one.
Right.
I think it was other issues that led to them looking like they sucked in week one.
Well, I'm sure they've been watching plenty of the film from last year against the Ravens. Again, they lost 41-7 last year. However, the Ravens went into the playoffs, and they lost in their opening round of the playoffs. They lost in the divisional round of the playoffs against the Tennessee Titans in a game that was that the Titans kind of controlled. I say controlled. I mean, the Ravens ran for a bunch of yards last year, but they turned the ball over on downs a few times. They turned the ball over conventionally turnovers a few times. So, Seth, let's do this here. You rewatched the Titans and the Ravens game, a game in which the Ravens got knocked out of the postseason for the second time in Lamar Jackson's short career without winning a postseason game. And you pulled some keys to the game that the Texans hopefully can replicate this Sunday. So let's get to these. Let's make people a little bit smarter heading towards Sunday. What is your first key that you extracted from the Titans' win over the Ravens last year?
This is a really simple one. It's simply win the short yardage situations. In that loss to the Titans last year, the Ravens gave up. The Ravens missed on 2 4th-and-1 attempts. Both of those attempts, by the way, were Lamar Jackson rushing attempts. Once where he took it in the gun, once where he took it under center, and it was just a classic QB sneak. Where he tried, it was more like a Tom Brady QB sneak. He tried to run to the right to, and then sneak in behind the tackle. But he bailed out for some reason just because there was color in front of him. The defensive line for the Titans did a great job in those situations. I think the Texans' defensive line is capable of doing that because much of the trouble the Texans had in the Chiefs game was when they were playing against the run and nickel defense. In these short yardage situations, they're more likely to have the big fellas up front, have three defensive linemen, big defensive linemen. And I think that they've got a chance to do that, but you've got to pull it off because, Sean, as you know, I'm a big-time baseball nerd.
The huge.
Stats, the analytics, all of that. I'm
biggest
a quant,
nerd I know.
Basically.
Yeah.
I can't get enough of the various types of war and all that. But this is one area where everybody should be happy that the nerds are taking over because people are going for it more on 4th-and-1. The Ravens, especially, are getting super aggressive, and John Harbaugh's leaning on the analytics, and they're going to go for it on 4th-down. And they were extremely successful with it in the regular season, but come the postseason, all it took was one game where they go for it on 4th-and-1 a couple times and get stuffed, and that was enough. You know, that wasn't even the deciding factor in the game, but that's part of what helped it be a blowout for the Titans.
Well, the flip side to that is that the Ravens, a little like the Chiefs, quite honestly, last Thursday, the Chiefs went for it. A pretty key juncture in that game was when the Chiefs went for it on 4th-and-1 in their own territory. They were in 2nd-and-3, then the Texans got a stop. And it was 3rd-and-2, and then the Texans get a stop on 3rd-and-2. That was the play where Cunningham and Murray kind of combined to twist Edwards-Hilaire right at the sticks. And so it's fourth and one, and not only do the Texans have a chance to get off the field, they've got a chance to get off the field and flip field position in a massive way. You're getting it basically in field goal range at that point, and instead the Chiefs convert. I think that's the other thing, is that the Ravens, not only are they not afraid to go for it in short yarded situations, they're not afraid to go for it on fourth and short on their own side of the field. So it really is one of those blackjack hands where you've got, man, multiple hands out there. You've split eights three times in a row, and you're either that drive's moving and you lose all your chips, or you win and you go, holy crap, my stacks are really high now and we're already in field goal range, especially early in the game. Because the Texans, I know as you're going to get to, getting a lead is really, really important as well.
If you are just tuning into the show for the first time and you're a big baseball fan or something, I want to warn you in advance. That was all a lie about me being a baseball nerd.
I don't know, man.
I'm not anti-nerd at all. I'm not anti-analytics or anything. I'm not smart enough to get deep into it the way some of these guys do.
You can fake it till you make it. You had me on the barrel rate.
Barrel rate.
Yeah.
Barrel rate. Well, hey, Sean, barrel rate's something different. Barrel rate's all about, that's just. The American ingenuity right there.
Yeah, that's putting the big part of the bat on the big part of the ball is what that is. All right,
something that the Astros have. They've not been hitting the ball all that hard.
Not very good.
They're making great contact. We got a bunch of little Ichiros out there.
That's right.
We've got actually a bunch of big Ichiros.
I know.
We got all these guys trying to slap hit it all over the place.
Last I checked, they've won two in a row. All right, Seth, what is your next key to the game for the Texans what is key number two that you extracted from the Titans win over the Ravens last year?
The defensive backs need to be awesome in run support. I think a lot of times, obviously, you think mostly about the defensive line and the linebackers when it comes to the run defense. Against the Ravens, especially, the defensive backs need to get involved. And I'm not just talking about the safeties coming up and filling a hole and all that. I'm talking about the cornerbacks on the edge. Because when Lamar Jackson is headed out on a QB sweep, that cornerback absolutely has to get to the edge and force it back inside, because Lamar Jackson's got extra blockers out there. You know, Whitney Merciless had a play last year where he played the play perfectly, and it just didn't matter because he ended up getting blocked by the running back after Whitney had already defeated two blockers on the play. And when the cornerback got his legs swept out from underneath him, Lamar Jackson had an open gate, you know, for a 7, 8, 9, 10-yard gain. They can't do that. They have to be very, very physical and disciplined. I think Roby is up to the task. Lonnie Johnson, who again, man, I don't know why he wasn't playing in the first half. I'm not buying that it was injuries. Lonnie Johnson, look, is a big dude. Should be awesome in run support. He hasn't really shown that yet in the NFL, but we haven't really seen a whole lot of him yet. I think he made improvements just from watching the second half of the Chiefs game. Even though for most of the game the score is already out of hand, or most of the second half, he's a better player as in pass coverage. He made some mistakes, but he's a better player. He improved. So he needs to be really good in run support on Sunday also.
Yeah, they got a tackle. I mean, their tackling was so, so poor in that Chiefs game.
I don't think I even put that on there, Sean.
I mean,
I was watching this Titans game, and yeah, they were tackling well too.
Right?
They didn't miss 20 tackles at least. I'll tell you that much.
That number feels low. I know O'Brien threw that out there as a number. Like, that number felt low. We missed 20 tackles. Yeah, in the first quarter. Yeah, what happened in the other three quarters?
20 tackles were missed by four guys with the most missed tackles. Rest of the team had 20 more.
All right, so we are going through keys to the game. Seth rewatched the Titans win over the Ravens last year. We are on key number three for the Texans if they're going to win this thing on Sunday, Seth.
This is simple. We know the Ravens blitz a lot. We know they're very good at it. You got to pick up the blitz. And some of that, oh boy. All right. This is where I was extremely frustrated after the game. And it's got to get better. It will get better because these are largely mental errors. But, man, Laremy Tunsil had one of the worst snaps I've ever seen in terms of picking up
blitz. Is that the one that you sent to me? Is that the one you texted to me? Yeah.
He says, like, this is zone blitz 101. Laremy Tunsil's the man he would be blocking, outside linebacker, dropped off into coverage. Which, like, the rule after that is, okay, if my guy drops off into coverage, I look back towards the ball because somebody's going to be coming back my way. Somebody has to come and contain the pocket on that side. Laremy Tunsil didn't see somebody's, so he decided to chase He's decided to chase a defensive tackle all the way down across the center's face. He basically single-handedly took out the entire left side of the offensive line. I was getting in arguments with people that were trying to defend him and saying it was just a mental error. No. This wasn't a mental. This is like cheating on your wife and saying that you just slipped up a little bit. Like, oh, hey, I just, it's like, no. Forgetting to do the dishes as you slipped up, cheating on your wife and or caving in the left side of the offensive line, completely abdicating everything you've known about zone blitzes since you were in high school, that is a cardinal sin. So they, A, eliminate the cardinal sins, and then B, maybe get to the venal sins. Just sometimes, Nick Martin did the same damn thing. These guys acted like they'd never seen zone blitzes or fake stunting before. Nick Martin's lined up. There's a linebacker over him. The linebacker acts like he's going to drop into coverage. So Nick Martin says, like, hey, cool. Guess I got the down off. Let me go help out the guy next to me. Buries his head. And then the linebacker comes in and gets a pressure. Like, these are really, 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 really stupid mistakes. Like, they just can't. I'm not even being mean here. Like, I'm actually being kind of gentle. Those are some of the dumbest things I've seen out of NFL football players. Like, Sean, let me tell you this. The guy that came free on that Laremy Tunsil mental error, he was a defensive tackle. He was doing what you call, it's a contain looper. I don't want to get too technical here, but basically he's a sacrificial lamb on this play. His only job is to occupy people and then run all the way around to contain. And you rarely get a pressure out of that unless something spills. But instead, he goes to figure, like, I gotta go run 3 miles to get out to contain now. I'm off to do my lonely duty. Yeah. Deshaun Watson's right in front of him. Sean, I played 10 years in the NFL. My God, if that had ever happened to me, it's like a gift ticket? From heaven. That never happened. Ever. It never got
100 grand
once. I
on
can't
a scratch
remember that.
Off. 100 grand.
Yeah, it's all right. Oh. He's making 19 million.
Are you jealous of that guy, Seth? Were you jealous of that guy as he's running into Deshaun's face?
He squandered the opportunity because he didn't expect to get that.
Right.
He didn't expect to come that free. Like, Sean, I can't tell you enough. The guy, what this guy, number 91 for the Chiefs, expects is like, okay, I did my duty. Now I got to go get to the outside shoulder of Laremy Tunsil, which means that, like, a better athlete in Laremy Tunsil is going to be able to see me coming and, like, just kind of guide me around. It's the easiest task in the world for the offensive tackle.
He
just completely botched it.
He sounded like you were about to say something else there. This is why I love when you break this stuff down. You and I were talking about this during the break, where we were talking about some O-line stuff, and I said to you, having been a defensive lineman in the league for 10 years, you're able to dissect and break down the stuff that I think is the polar opposite of what regular football fans who may watch the All-22 look at. We're always looking at the ball. You know what I mean? We're always watching where the ball goes. That's where the exciting stuff is happening. You're able to break down the stuff going on in the trenches. And the reason I'm bringing this up on the air is because the very play you're talking about with Laremy Tunsil caving in the line and just basically rolling out a red carpet for that Chiefs player to get into Sean's face, I think was one of those plays where Deshaun was forced to move, and then he threw a missile at one of the running back's heads, and it bounced off of him and bounced off their hands. And I can tell you right now that I guarantee you, if I were to go back and rewind my life, my reaction to that play was, Deshaun, what are you doing? David Johnson, catch the ball. Like, meanwhile, the whole reason the play was botched and that Deshaun had to throw a missile and that David Johnson wasn't really expecting a ball that fast was because the line screwed up.
Look, there were a couple plays in that game. No, John, and I'm glad you said that, Sean, because it wasn't the only time it happened. The other time that it happened was on the interception where, boy, I want to praise the offensive line and at the same time crush them, because in both these instances that I'm talking about, well, the one where Laremy Tunsil screwed up and then the other one on the Deshaun Watson interception, they initially did a great job picking up the blitz. But then through either really bad mental or physical mistakes, they blew it. And Deshaun, in his mind, he knows the pass protection. He knows who's blocking whom. And when he knows that the blitz is picked up, it kind of frees him and releases him, right, to look downfield. Yeah. So in both those instances, the other instance was where Tyrann Mathieu was blitzing and Darren Fells had him one-on-one, which should have been like he got him at the line. And the play should be dead there. Tyrann Mathieu, once he gets picked up by a 270-pound tight end at the line, that's it. Like, Tyrann Mathieu isn't a threat anymore. And then all of a sudden, Tyrann Mathieu basically goes all Reggie White, Howie Long.
Ragdolled Darren Fells.
On Darren Fells. I know, he ragdolled him. Like, and of course it catches Deshaun off guard. Same thing with the Tunsil mistake. They picked up that blitz really well initially. The Chiefs blitzed a linebacker and a defensive back. I think it was Tyrann again on this one. They picked it up perfectly. So Deshaun's not thinking that all of a sudden I'm going to get waylaid by a fat defensive tackle. Like, that's how you did in. That's how you were done in. It's like having the perfect perimeter defense. It's having your perimeter guarded perfectly, like at a camp in war. But then the little old lady carrying a basket of eggs waltzes in with an Uzi under her skirt. You know, like, it just. Like, I'm here to sell eggs and also spray you with this Uzi.
A text message. Nick Martin was busy thinking about free workout.
Oh, Sean, that's what, okay. All right, this is supposed to be about keys to victory. And it is. It is.
You've got two more, just to remind you, Seth, you've got two more that we're going to get to, yes.
And this is why these guys will be better. I swear to God, I'm going to give another haphazard excuse that is not an actual excuse, but maybe an explanation. I swear all the guys who got paid, like, Nick Martin got paid a long time ago, but I swear all the guys that got paid this offseason acted like they had been counting their money for the last 2 weeks instead of actually being focused. Like,
all of them.
I feel like they're like, oh, well, gosh, I got to buy a house now or something.
Yes.
It was all the guys that got big contracts completely underperformed.
Yep.
It was ridiculous. It was amazing. It's the exact opposite. Bill O'Brien's argument for paying most of those guys would be like, hey, this is the kind of guy that's going to show up no matter what. Yeah, I guess unless you pay him.
No.
There you go. Those guys all. Zach Cunningham, Laremy Tunsil.
Whitney.
Who else got paid?
Whitney.
Whitney. Like, all these guys that got paid.
Randall Cobb.
Be thinking this week, man, it looks, Randall Cobb. It looks like I walked up to the pay window with a bandit's mask and a gun. Because this is, they're robbing the Texans right now. They got to do better than that.
They may as well have been lighting expensive cigars on fire with $100 bills on the sidelines the way they were playing. All right, let's continue. Seth Payne's keys to the game here on a Football Friday, presented by Carpac Hoppadillo IPA. Seth is pulling these keys from the Titans Ravens game in the playoffs where the Titans beat them last year. Seth, key number four.
Build a lead early. And I know this sounds stupid, but let's remember, you've built leads early versus the Chiefs twice now. It's not like it's an insurmountable goal. I think there is something about Lamar Jackson and his ability to play from behind. It's not like he can't do it, and it's not like he hasn't done it, but I think he's a different guy when he has that pressure of trying to come from behind, and that's what it looked like in this game. It looked like he turned the ball over twice where it looked like he was really pressing. There's an ill-advised pass, and then there was one where he's hanging onto the play too long, and he got stripped in the pocket, and it was a weird play where a defensive lineman took a shot at him. Jackson stepped up and almost acted like he was in a clean pocket, like had the ball cocked behind his ear, and he got stripped, easy as that, because he made a huge target of the ball. I think he starts to feel that pressure, and he's not as good a guy when he's playing from behind. So get a lead early, turn the heat up on him, and have him cough the ball up three times like he did in this game versus the Titans in the playoffs.
Weaver was adamant about that yesterday in his press conference, Seth. He was asked about all the yards given up on the ground to the Chiefs, and he's like, look, it sucks giving up all these yards, but we got to turn teams over, man. Like, we've got to go get the freaking football. He said the Titans gave up 500 yards of offense to the Ravens last year, but they got off the field. They either stripped Lamar Jackson, intercepted him, converted, important fourth downs. They were able to turn the Ravens over. Weaver was adamant about that in his press conference yesterday. All right, Seth, what is the last key to the game that you pulled from the Titans win last year?
I'm going to pull a lateral here because we kind of already covered the don't give Lamar Jackson an open door.
That's okay. Do it louder this time.
I'm going to say the thing that I hate to hear from football coaches and that Texans fans are sick of hearing from Bill O'Brien. Are you ready for it?
Yes, of course.
Establish the run.
Oh,
I'm sorry. You got to establish the run.
I don't even know you.
Now, look, it doesn't need to be the way the Titans did it. They don't have a Derrick Henry. Obviously, there are very few Derrick Henrys walking this earth, mm-hmm. as Mark Ingram will tell you. I think that it's a matter of establishing good, long, sustained drives. Not because you're necessarily afraid of Lamar Jackson, but because Lamar Jackson, and when he's at his best, has drives that take forever because they're just grinding the ball out. They're running, they're sprinkling in the pass. Like, they're not a quick strike offense the way that the Chiefs are. So if you get that lead early and then you can establish long sustained drives, you know, whether it's through the run or dinking and dunking or whatever, it just gives the Ravens run out of clock.
Yeah.
So it's as simple as that. I think that David Johnson, again, after watching the game a couple more times, each time I watch, I'm a little bit more impressed with him. And so far, so good. I was very, very skeptical of David Johnson coming in. If he keeps putting together performances like he did in that first week, where at times he was running really well into a loaded box, it wasn't just against six-man boxes and whatnot, that's going to end up being good for the Texans.
If you wanted a stat, Seth, where I go, okay, the Texans either won or lost this game, if David Johnson has more than 20 touches in this game, it means they probably won the game. If he has fewer than 20, if he has 14 touches again, like he did against the Chiefs, they probably lost this game.
Except it'll be because they have a lead.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It's going well, right.
It's a chicken and egg thing, but I'm just saying, if you show me the box score after the game and put your hand over the score and I'll just look at how many touches David Johnson had, I will be able to tell you what the result of the game was once you move your hand off of it.
So to reiterate, in the keys to the game, the offensive line, first and foremost, has to start acting like they're not stoned all the time.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah, there you go. That's the big
one. Or would it be barbiturates? What was the drug that they were in that Leonardo DiCaprio movie?
I can't imagine they were depressants. You know, I would imagine. Well,
they're acting kind of lethargic and kind of just slow and just kind of like they're like seeing tracers. Like, okay. I don't know, which guy should I block? Which of those four
images
should I block?
Hallucinogens,
yeah.
We head into the 7 o'clock hour on a Football Friday presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA. Download the radio.com app and you can bring us with you wherever you go. The Ravens defensive coordinator did a cross-sport comparison with Deshaun Watson that should excite Texan fans. We'll let you hear it next.
Quick.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.